Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Celebrating in the streets of Damascus after the fall of Bashar al-Assad's government following a lightning-fast advance by rebel forces. There are reports he has fled the capital. It is unclear where he is at this hour. Assad's family has ruled with an iron fist for the country for 50 years.
Yeah, this is there's no way to overstate the significance of what is going on right now in the Middle East. And there's a long history to it. We'll get to as much of it as we can. God, so much happening over the weekend. And I'll just tell you first thing, if you want to talk about the Trump interview, I haven't even watched it yet. There was so much other stuff going on, especially with the fall of Assad in Syria. Massive change in the power structure in the Middle East following the, you know, total embarrassment of Hezbollah, Hamas being degraded. Now what's the future with Iran? Nobody's quite sure, but this is where things are headed. Is, you know, a lot of things that seem to be in place before are not now.
After 54 years, the Assad regime in Syria has fallen. Overnight, rebels entered the capital of Damascus unopposed. Thousands of Syrians gathered in the city celebrating the collapse of government control. As reports indicate, former President Bashar al-Assad fled by plane. Impassioned civilians stormed the Iranian embassy compound, a country that spent billions of dollars propping up the regime.
Yeah, and these forces that have been finally successful in the long simmering, sometimes hot, sometimes not, civil war in Syria, this goes back 12 to 13 years, all the way to the Arab Spring. And the problem is now, okay, and to kind of understand all of this, you have to know who are the players, but you generally have the two main branches of Islam. You have the Shia, which is primarily represented in the Middle East by Iran and their proxies, which would be the Houthis in Yemen, Hamas in the West Bank, the Hezbollah in Lebanon. And I don't want to go through the whole like fingertip war versus the wristbone war, but it's worth remembering kind of the geography of all this. And also in Syria, which was, you know, not adjacent. It is, but it's, you know, more north, like Iraq facing anyway, and Turkey on the north. But it's sort of between on the west, you have Lebanon, and then over on the east, you have Iran through Iraq. Okay. So this is the north. This is like almost to Turkey. And again, I apologize if you don't know the geography. It's hard to keep track of all this stuff. But that has been. Okay, Iranian allied. It has been Shia. These groups are Sunnis. And the Sunnis are ISIS, okay, which is the reconstituted or worsened version of Al-Qaeda, which, of course, was an offshoot of Saudi Arabia. So, you know, and also a lot of, in Iraq has always been kind of a cobbled together, you know, some parts are Shia, some parts are Sunni, some parts in the north are Kurds. Which is its own interesting problem. You know, how does an entire people group not have a nation, really? Well, because the Brits drew it a certain way. I mean, that's the answer, and it's been that way ever since. But again, a lot of kind of, you know, we're all having to sort of relearn all of these groups in these territories. But still, this is a historic change. But the incoming rebels are, think of them like a variety of gangs that all want to be, Osama bin Laden, basically.
The rebel takeover came after a rapid 11-day offensive that started by taking the northern city of Aleppo before opposition forces worked their way south. Abu Muhammad al-Jalani, the leader of Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, or HTS, insists there will be an orderly transfer of power. His organization is a U.S.-designated terror group, and the 42-year-old himself is the founder of Jabhat al-Nusra, an al-Qaeda affiliate. Amid concern of further instability and unpredictable activity in Syria, Israeli forces are ramping up their posture along the border, sending soldiers into the buffer zone with Syria. This demilitarized area of the Golan Heights will likely be held by the Israelis, with rebel forces now controlling the other side of the border. This afternoon, reports do indicate Israeli forces were bombing Syria in an effort to target weapons belonging to the Assad regime. They don't want some of those weapons to fall into the hands of rebel forces.
Right. I mean, which makes perfect sense. But Israel is basically working on its border against all of these problems. And the Golan Heights have been this historically contested area. But, degrading the possibility of whoever takes over the control and, you know, maintains it, if they are able to, in Syria, that they don't have the weapons inherited from the Syrian regular army, which would be bad because we don't want them to have more arms. I mean, better if they're all disarmed, so destroying as much as we possibly can. And the airstrikes being ordered last night, kind of our time. Anyway, degrading their capabilities, maybe also the U.S. getting involved in this, at least with attacks against ISIS. Reporting, you know, both the president confirming that last night and reporting on the ground saying the same thing.
The president then ordered more than 75 precision airstrikes against ISIS camps and operatives in central Syria on Sunday. Central Command claims there are no indications of civilian casualties so far.
Hey, you know, if we're using ordnance against anything like ISIS, reconstituted ISIS, Al-Qaeda, you know, good. Good. And we still do have U.S. presence, something like 900 troops inside of Syria at several different locations. Where is Assad now in Moscow? Where are his statues all toppled? I don't know if you saw any of the video of people riding the statues, dragging them in the street. They can't drag him in the street, so they'll drag the statues in effigy memory of him. I mean, this is a massive liberation moment for Syria. But again, like I mentioned, there's a long history. And, you know, the Biden administration is now kind of, overtly taking credit for having brought this about.
You know, over the past 4 years, my administration pursued a clear and principled policy towards Syria. First, we made clear from the start sanctions on Assad would remain in place unless he engaged seriously in a political process to end the civil war, as outlined by the UN Security Council resolution passed in 2015. But Assad refused, so we carried out a comprehensive sanction program against him and all those responsible for atrocities against the Syrian people.
So we did sanctions and we made this happen.
Second, we maintained our military presence in Syria, our counter-ISIS, to counter the support of local partners as well on the ground, their partners, never ceding an inch of territory, taking out leaders of ISIS, ensuring that ISIS can never establish a safe haven there again.
So, again, sanctions, ISIS, also.
Third, we've supported Israel's freedom of action against Iranian networks in Syria and against actors aligned with Iran who transported lethal aid to Lebanon. And when necessary, ordered the use of military force against Iranian networks to protect U.S. forces.
So he's taken a victory lap. Now, it's a victory lap for the world, okay? Assad is a story that... like, if Hitler never got anywhere, that's how to think about Assad. A genuinely evil guy. If all he did was rule over his country, but he didn't really successfully invade anywhere else, that's the way to think about Assad. This is, I mean, most Americans don't hear a lot about this, don't do a lot of news on it, not a lot comes out, because it was all kind of internal to them and it wasn't really affecting everybody else, okay? But Assad is a genuinely really bad guy. You remember in the Arab Spring when all of these dictators were being toppled and Gaddafi was toppled and Mubarak and Egypt was toppled and in Tunisia, you know, you had all of these dictators toppled. And you remember what happened with Assad? You may not, but he turned to violence against his own people and he managed to, you know, by the fingertips, keep control. And then he threatened, or we were concerned about, that he would use chemical weapons against his own people. And you remember President Obama at the time gave his red line speech, red line, you know, that people have been talking about red line in the Senate. It's not really what he said at the time, but he said, we have been clear that they must not use these weapons against their own people.
We have been very clear to the Assad regime, but also to other players on the ground that a red line for us is we start seeing a whole bunch of chemical weapons moving around or being utilized. That would change my calculus. That would change my equation.
So if he uses chemical weapons against his own people, or if we see a lot of them being mobilized, that might change the calculus to intervene with military action. So what happened is in 2012, that's the speech by Obama. Arab Spring starts in like 2011. And then you have 2012. Obama gives this, you know, red line declaration against Syria. Don't you dare use chemical weapons. 2013, he uses chemical weapons. Sarin gas, kills his own people, a couple thousand. Nobody knows for sure how many, but something like that. And then we didn't do anything. You say, well, why does that matter? Because we emboldened so much of the bad behavior that went on thereafter. Right? After that, in the spring of 2014, was when Crimea was taken by Russia. Remember, that was the first Ukrainian invasion. They took the Crimean Peninsula and the Black Sea. No consequence. Okay. That was the first Ukrainian invasion. So it was in, you can make the argument that Obama's unwillingness to follow through on his promise, his threat, his red line comment, is what emboldened the ongoing survival of the Assad regime after they did cross that line, that emboldened Russia to take Crimea, and subsequently under Obama II, called Joe Biden, to take as much of Ukraine as they could get. You know, they didn't do this under Trump. Okay. So you can make the argument that Joe Biden is making. We've been clear with Syria. We have allowed them to have sanctions. We have had sanctions against others who have acted against the international order. We have supported Ukraine in its pushback against Russia. We have supported Israel in its pushback against the attacks from Hamas and Hezbollah. We have been there for all of these different anti-Shia forces in the Middle East and the ones who have been propping them up, like Russia, who is now massively degraded because of their stupidity in Ukraine, their aggression in Ukraine. Okay, but what you're really saying is we made this happen by looking so weak and unwilling that we invited aggression that led to the attack against Israel on both fronts, that led to the attack against Ukraine, not just the second one, but the first one as well. And that lured the bad people into getting beaten by Ukraine with a lot of support from the West and by Israel with some support from the West. I mean, lots of support from the West, but not the same way we're supporting it in Ukraine. They're pretty capable on their own. So it was our weakness that invited aggression that then allowed the good guys to win that's now degraded Syria and Russia, and Iran. It's a weird argument to brag about. It's not the way he's bragging about it. He's bragging about us having done all of this. Of course, the big wins against ISIS in Syria were not under Obama. They were under, who's the guy who came after Obama, right before Biden got into office? Who's that guy who had 4 years right in there that beat ISIS? Oh, yeah, Trump. Trump. When Obama gave up on ISIS and thought it couldn't be done. And Trump comes in, we're done. I mean, not quite that simple, but grand sweep, you know, 30,000 foot view. Yes, that simple. So now that the byproduct of all that and the byproduct of the weakness of the Obama of the Biden administration inviting all of this aggression, and we're discovering that a lot of these forces didn't have enough to back up their aggression to do what they thought they could do. They turn out to be paper tigers. Okay, Hezbollah, for example, compared to Israel, Russia, for example, compared to Ukraine, and everything we have done to support them. And now you're bragging about what you managed to pull off, which is really a byproduct of your own projection of weakness and Obama's original unwillingness to back up the red line comment. So you start to see about the credibility of deterrence. You start to see about saying what you mean and then doing it, even if it's wrong, following through so that people know that you're to be taken seriously. So who gets the credit for this? I think it's a highly mixed bag. Is it a good thing for the people of Syria? Time will tell. Is it an improvement? I mean, is Assad being gone a good? Yeah. No, 100% yes. But as you have seen in Iraq, And as you have seen elsewhere, one dictator goes, instability, terrorism. Think the Taliban in Afghanistan, you know, getting rid of the Taliban was, you know, sort of a good thing, it seemed. But in the long run, did it really work, right? Well, instability, terrorist groups, it's not a simple picture. So what now? No, the president said all the right things last night. We got to support our neighbors in the region. We've got to work with whoever is in power in Syria. We've got to encourage them to support human rights and tolerate minority groups and dissent. And we've got to kind of hope for the best that it doesn't just become, you know, either a failed state, very possible, or not that it was doing great, but at least it was, you know, intact under Assad, or, you know, a breeding ground for more and more terrorism. All things that could possibly happen. We got to remain vigilant. 524 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I will tell you the most concerning thing of all came right at the end of his speech last night, which was during the speech he mentioned about Austin Tice being held, an American, in Syria for now more than a decade, and they yelled out questions to him as he was leaving.
What should happen to Assad now, Mr. President?
Mr. President,
what does the U.S. know about that war and release?
What does the U.S. know about where Austin Tice might be and if he's safe?
We believe he's alive. We think we can get him back, but we have no direct evidence of that yet. And Assad should be held accountable.
We think he's alive. We think we can get him back. And then the second follow-up question.
Have you directed an operation to go get him, Mr.
President?
President,
is Assad your most dead?
Have you set up an operation to go get Austin Tice, right? Listen again.
Have you directed an operation to go get him, Mr.
President?
President,
is Assad your most dead?
Get who?
Austin Tice.
We won't want to get him out.
Yes, sir.
We have to identify where he is. Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
To get who? To get who? The guy you brought up in your speech. The guy you were just explaining how you think he's alive, but you're not sure if you can get him back. Did you in those 2 seconds forget who you were talking about? Or is he just trying to be, you know, to clarify and make sure that they're not asking about whether he's going after Assad in Moscow? Seems unlikely, but he gave a teleprompter speech. Is he running the country? Who knows? 526 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Why pay more for prescriptions? Stop overpaying and start saving with SingleCare. It's easy. Find your prescription on singlecare.com, show the coupon at the pharmacy, and start saving. SingleCare works at pharmacies nationwide and is completely free to use, whether you have insurance or not. So the next time you fill a prescription, check SingleCare to make sure you're getting the best price. Take control of your prescription costs. Go to singlecare.com or download the free app today.
You've got a Pepto predicament, Festive Feaster.
Who wants another slice of Grammy's famous pumpkin pie?
I do.
I do not. I think I need to lay down for a minute.
You overdid it on all the family favorites, and now your stomach's throwing a Yuletide tantrum. Undo it with Pepto-Bismol.
When you have nausea, heartburn, indigestion, upset stomach, diarrhea.
Pepto Chewables provide fast 5-symptom relief, so you can get back to the feast and the festivities.
Who's ready for some games?
When you overdo it, undo it with Pepto. Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
Hi, this is Andrew McKay, and I wish you and your family a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
From all of us to all of you, Merry Christmas.
Ho, ho, ho.
Oh, no! Jeez, I gotta take a leak so bad I can taste it.
Good morning, 528 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Good parades over the weekend. UWF had their commencement over the weekend. I can't believe I'm a dad of a college graduate. That's crazy. I mean, at 32, you wouldn't think I'd be old enough. Anyway, also, CSX decided to get us again. You thought we were done with CSX. Oh, no, no. They came back and closed Old Chemstrand, Kingsfield, 10 Mile. Ha-ha! Happy Saturday. Now, the good news is they're trying to refurbish and repair the bad fixes they put in place in the first place. How is it so hard to get it just right the first time? Anyway, so it's fixing their own bad fixes. So theoretically, that's going to make things better. But as of this moment, to the best of my knowledge, St. John by PCC is closed. 10 Mile, I thought that one was fine. I don't know why they closed that one. That one is actually fine. I haven't driven the other ones. But 10 Mile, Kingsfield, and Old Chemstrand are all at this moment supposed to be closed. Opening Old Chemstrand today afternoon. 10 Mile and Kingsfield maybe around 7 a.m. We'll see. Happy days again. David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
The old fix the fix. Gotta love that. The search continuing for evidence in the shooting death of United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson. NYPD dive crews were in Central Park on Sunday searching a pond there. Police say they have yet to recover the gun that was used in the shooting last Wednesday in Manhattan, and so far no suspect has been identified. TikTok's future is still up in the air. A federal appeals court panel Friday upheld a law mandating the sale or ban of the company. In a bipartisan effort, Congress passed the legislation to protect U.S. interests. President Biden signed off on that bill in April. TikTok, of course, argues that it's a violation of their First Amendment right.
And have you ever learned a TikTok dance?
No.
Me either. Go on.
Apple apparently is the best-run company in the U.S. That's according to the Wall Street Journal. More than 800 companies were evaluated in five categories: customer satisfaction, innovation, social responsibility, employee engagement, and development and financial strength.
All of those metrics tabulated with the tidy help of Apple products. All right, David, thanks so much for the updates. Oh, so Alabama's number 11, but they're not good enough to be in the 12-team playoff? Weird things afoot at the CFP.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster.
It's a moment of historic opportunity for the long-suffering people of Syria.
President Biden says the collapse of Syria's dictatorship is also a moment of risk and uncertainty.
As we all turn to the question of what comes next, the United States will work with our partners and the stakeholders in Syria to help them seize an opportunity to manage the risks.
Bashar al-Assad or his father had controlled Syria since 1971. Rapper and businessman Jay-Z says he'll fight a lawsuit accusing him of child sexual assault.
A woman claims the music star and entrepreneur, along with music mogul Sean Diddy Combs, sexually assaulted her when she was 13 years old. The anonymous accuser says it happened back in 2000. Jay-Z, whose real name is Sean Carter, denies the accusation and calls it, quote, idiotic.
Fox's Marianne Rafferty, the woman sued Combs in October and now adds Jay-Z to that. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. It is 72 degrees right now. We've got cloudy skies in Pensacola. One man is dead, six juveniles hurt in a shooting in Mobile over the weekend. Police say the shots rang out after a disagreement at a bonfire. One man was found dead in a field. The two juveniles with serious injuries were found nearby as well. Area hospitals later reported that four more juveniles had checked in with gunshot wounds. That party was happening behind a commercial trucking and repair property. Investigators do not believe that the business is linked to the incident. So far, there's no word on any motives or suspects. Well, now that you've got your Black Friday and Cyber Monday shopping out of the way, it's time to get everything wrapped and out the door. Well, you'll have to be prepared to pay a little bit more this holiday season. Shipping prices are higher than ever this year, but it is important not to wait a whole lot longer. There's some key shipping deadlines ahead to ensure any gifts you have to send by mail arrive by Christmas Eve. December 13th is the deadline to ship using FedEx Ground Economy. December 18th would be the cutoff for USPS Ground Advantage service. December 19th would be the last day for USPS Priority Mail. December 19th also the last day for UPS 3-Day Select. And for UPS Ground deadlines, you'd have to check with them. If you're interested in those Margaritaville specialty license plates that were approved by the Florida legislature this year, you might want to hurry. New specialty plates in Florida have to get at least 3,000 pre-sales before the first one comes off of the press. There's a limited time to do that. As of November 25th, only just over 1,500 of those plates pre-sales have been bought. Interested parrot heads would need to buy 1,411 more of those plates them to start being made. Laura Trump is stepping down as the co-chair of the Republican National Committee. Reports are that she's being considered to replace Senator Marco Rubio, who President-elect Donald Trump has tapped for Secretary of State. Rubio's term ends in 2026. Governor DeSantis said last month that he's hoping to have Rubio's replacement announced early next month. Donald Trump has appointed his defense attorney as counselor to the president. Alina Haba defended Trump during his New York hush money case and acted as his legal spokesperson. In a post on Truth Social, the president-elect noted Haba's unwavering loyalty and unmatched resolve. Haba, who's recently spent time at Mar-a-Lago alongside the president on the campaign trail, spoke at an event at Madison Square Garden. Well, Florida Representatives Maxwell Frost and Sheriff Luce McCormick are introducing a bill to prevent radioactive materials from being used to build roads. Miami waterkeeper Dr. Rachel Silverstein says the chemical at issue, phosphogypsum, is very dangerous and says it could cause cancer.
Very terrible idea for pretty much everyone and everything in Florida except fertilizer companies.
And Florida already allows the material to be used for road construction. In 2021, a leak at a PG facility led millions of gallons of untreated wastewater be released into Tampa Bay and caused a red tide outbreak. It's 5:35 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast this morning.
We do have a 90% chance of the rain as we go throughout your day today. High near 70 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 66. On Tuesday, high rain chances again, 90% with a high near 70 degrees. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping near 47 degrees. Cooling off on Wednesday with a 10% chance of some showers, high near 54 and a low near 40. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And we do have 72 right now in Pensacola, 70 in Gulf Breeze, 65 in Milton. Our next news at 6 o'clock. We've got breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. The Bank of New York Mellon Corporation has sold its data center and office building in South Buffalo for $5.5 million to a subsidiary of an Irish firm. Spokesperson Ryan Wells did not offer any additional details and declined to comment on how many employees were impacted. The Walt Disney Company's animated film Moana 2 remained at the top of the box office in its second weekend in theaters as it brought in another record haul. The film added $52 million, according to studio estimates. That brings its domestic total to $300 million, surpassing the original. QVC is recalling more than 1 million pairs of Temptation oven gloves because they failed to provide sufficient heat protection. The Consumer Product Safety Commission said more than 90 injuries have been reported. Futures are slightly lower. Friday, the Dow Industrials lost 123, the NASDAQ up 159, and the S&P 500 up 15. Once again, futures are slightly lower. That's Your Money Now.
Seeking the pulse of economic strength?
The Port of Pensacola is more than a name. It's the driving force behind Northwest Florida's progress. Home to over 20 major businesses, from C-Mex Materials to General Electric Wind Energy, and now the world-renowned American Magic Sailing Team. Since 1754, they've been a catalyst for prosperity and growth. Ready to shape the future? Visit portofpensacola.com and discover how they power the region's success.
Whether you want to start your education or advance your career, Pensacola State College is the place for you. Join the 92% of PSC students who graduate loan-free and select from over 100 programs, ranging from career certificates to baccalaureate degrees. In addition, Pensacola State has over 300 scholarships to choose from, including cybersecurity. Register today for spring semester. Classes start January 10th. Go to pensacolastate.edu. That's pensacolastate.edu.
Hi, this is Todd Thompson, President and CEO of the Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. Tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel for the Chamber Connection Show that will keep you informed on what's going on with your Chamber of Commerce. Tune in at 10 to find out about our upcoming events, all of our different programs, and what's happening with our local business community. It's the Chamber Connection Show every other Monday at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
time to give peace a chance. And today is a great day to get started. This is Chris Bryan, host of Pensacola Right Now, wishing you a happy Hanukkah, a Merry Christmas, and a Happy New Year.
Hi, this is Tasca King with ADX Digital and Radio Advertising Sales, wishing you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
News Radio 92.3.
ETN makes a cut. ETN barrels into the end zone. Georgia's got the lead behind the backup quarterback.
Georgia finally picked up. Somebody finally got a touchdown this game. Georgia in the third quarter with 10 minutes to go. They get a 10-yard touchdown run by Trevor Etienne. First lead of the game and the first touchdown of the game against Texas in the SEC championship game. There was a field goal, and then, of course, Texas came back also.
Now it's third and three. Beaufort wide open. His Moore and his slant still running. DeAndre Moore wins the foot race. Texas strikes back from 41 yards. Momentum back on their side now.
And Georgia late in the game, 4 minutes to go, a chip shot.
Woodring, a chip shot to give Georgia the lead back. Ooh, pounds it right through.
Barely. What's going on? 16-13. That's Georgia takes the lead over Texas with 5 minutes to go with 22 seconds on the clock. Texas, whose kicker has missed two field goals already in this game, they would have won that game had they done that.
From 37 in a deadlock. No problem. Looks like a guy
easy peasy
who believes in himself and pressure kicks.
That.
So, tie game going to overtime. Georgia in an overtime game. Say it isn't so. Again, after the Georgia Tech marathon last time, Texas can't get in the end zone, but...
And the kicker with the reliable pedigree and the interesting hair right back out there from 32. And that time knocks it through. Not quite as confident a swing as it was to force overtime.
19-13 Texas in the first overtime. Georgia gets the ball. And Gunnar Stockton, who is the backup quarterback to Carson Beck. Carson Beck got knocked out with a very, very painful looking, you know, like he got his arm tackled basically while he was throwing. And it's the most vulnerable time for a quarterback. He's back stretched out. And then if the arm goes the wrong way, oh, it's always scary. So he's been out for the whole half. So Gunnar Stockton was the guy who got that first touchdown, has been leading the kind of the comeback and maybe the lead against Texas, but he's the backup. Who knows? So he's a runner too. And he's getting ready to make a run play up the middle to score a touchdown, or going to try to.
Dogs 12 yards away from the win. Stockton running all the way up the middle. Gunnar Stockton knocked in the head by Makuba. Helmet goes flying. Thankfully, he's up on his feet. Flag goes flying as well.
He got hammered at the two, or at the four. Somewhere like right in that. It was brutal. Like, hit a brick wall and his helmet came flying off. Like, you remember the old Rock'em Sock'em Robots, when you're punching and the head pops up? Like, that's what it looked like, is that his helmet just... Thwing! Thank God he was fine, but he's out for a play by rule when your helmet comes off. I think it's a weird rule, but it is the rule. When your helmet comes off, you're out for a play. So they bring back in Carson Beck with the injured arm, and his mom's crying on the sideline, and everybody's, what's going to happen? He can't throw the ball because his arm is so messed up.
Etienne in the I formation. They hand it to him. Touchdown! Georgia SEC champions! As every dog digs really deep.
Look, I'm not a Georgia fan, but that's a pretty good moment. It's a pretty good, because you were scared when Gunnar Stockton got hit. It looked really, really bad. Meanwhile, Oregon, number one, taking on Penn State, number three in the Big Ten championship with Oregon. It's still, I mean, I lived in Oregon for 2 years. I'm an Oregon fan, so this is kind of a fun year for me, but it's weird, the realignment. It's weird seeing Texas in the SEC. John, tell me I'm wrong. It's weird, right?
Oh, no, you're not wrong. It's very weird.
It's all strange. Like,
it really is.
I don't even know who's in what anymore. I haven't memorized them all yet, but it's crazy times out there. In any case, Oregon playing Penn State in what looked like was going to be an Oregon, not quite blowout walk away, but looked like it was going to be pretty good. 3.5 minutes left to go in the game, and Oregon is beating Penn State at this point by two scores at least. Fourth down.
Warren trots over to the left side. Drew Aller asking for it. In trouble. They have a hold of his jersey, and he throws to the end zone.
Whoa! What a
touchdown!
Play.
Falling out of bounds, circus catch, fingertips, draws it in, toe tap, done. Amazing. So PSU gets that on, again, 4th and 10, had to have it, right? So they're at 37-45, and then with a minute and a half, 2 minutes really, they come out of the two-minute pause. Penn State is driving again, only down by 8 at this point, needing a score and a point after to tie it.
So here we go, 2 minutes left. There's Tevin's numbers.
Just remind everybody again,
it's second
and
one.
These two teams are both playing for the number one seed because of Texas losing.
Drew Aller loads, going deep. Far sideline. It's intercepted. Picked off by Nico Reed.
And that's the game.
Boy, that's an odd play call.
No, it's not. No, it's not. He got 9 yards on first down. You've got a free second down to take a shot. He took a shot. What do you mean it's an odd play call? Literally, I'm watching this game thinking, oh, they're going to take a bomb shot here because they've got a free down to work with. They took a bomb shot. It didn't work. They got intercepted because they threw in a bad location. But that's exactly what I expected. What do you mean? John, am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong, my friend.
Dude.
I was like, what?
Yeah, what do you mean it's a weird play call? It's exactly the obvious play call. The weird play call would have been running up the middle, get the first down. That would have been the unexpected thing. Okay, whatever. You know, they've got their job. I've got my job. meanwhile, Clemson, SMU. Clemson at number 22 and SMU at number 8. This turns out to be a pretty important game for the world of football. I taped this on a lark. I thought, I'll tape it just in case it's interesting. SMU's been the team that, you know, hasn't faced any, you know, real teams, but they've got a strong record and they were ranked highly and kind of, you know, were they paper tiger? How would they do against an actual team in Clemson? Well, you know, with 16 seconds to go, SMU down by 3.
He's thrown for 306, 10 seconds on the play clock. Still the two timeouts.
And they had trailed by 14.
Not much pressure. Jennings, side of the end zone. Touchdown!
Excuse me, not down by 3, down by 7. So they tied the game. And then with time expiring, Clemson comes 56 yards. Their field goal kicker, who has never kicked one past 51.
It'll be a 56-yarder. The win really not a factor. Snap and hold are good. That one is good! At the buzzer, Clemson wins the ACC.
Pretty good if you're a Clemson fan. Not so good if you're an SMU fan, and now all the uncertainty develops. We lost in the ACC championship game. We had this good record. Are we going to get in? We had a weak schedule. Are we going to be out? Is Alabama going to be in with 3 losses? What about Ole Miss, right? What about South Carolina? Who's going to get in the college football championship or the college football playoff? Well, it turns out you don't get in if you have 3 losses. Asterisk. Unless you're Clemson. Because if you're going to put SMU in, well, Clemson just beat SMU. You have to let them in. So that's exactly what they did. All the 3-loss teams were out. The 2-loss and 1-loss team in Oregon undefeated gets in. But you have to let Clemson in because they beat SMU at the end. That's the best I can do. Other than that, it doesn't. And it also, you know, it doesn't make sense, John. I'm so baffled by all of this. How is it that Alabama, and I'm not pulling for Alabama. You know, cry me a river, Alabama, right? But how is Alabama ranked number 11 and they're out? Clemson is number 16 and they're in. What?
Yes.
just make the rankings match the picks.
Exactly.
At least have enough, sense of mind to, make that make sense for the football world? Because otherwise, everybody's looking at the same. And I literally didn't get how this was possible. I thought I might have been looking at some old rankings or something. Like, I thought I was.
Right, that's what I thought, too.
Refresh. Like, is this the new? No, posted at, noon on Sunday. What? How is that possible? So, yeah, it's weird times. It's also super weird times to see ASU with a bye.
Hey,
I guess if you win,
they were picked the last in their division.
I know,
in preseason.
But if you pick, I lived in Arizona for a long time, for about 7 years, so didn't ever become an ASU fan or an Arizona fan. Didn't really care that, I was more of a Cardinals fan at the time. Kurt Warner was the Cardinals quarterback, so that was more fun. But managed to skate through living in Phoenix without ever becoming a local fan, and then lived 2 years in Oregon, fell in love with the Ducks because they're a fun team to watch. Boise State, Oregon, Georgia, Arizona all get the byes, and then you got Clemson, Texas, Tennessee, Ohio State, SMU, Penn State, and Indiana, Notre Dame. And we're off for the first year of the 12-team playoff.
Indiana, I don't think, should be there.
Yeah, strength of schedule.
They ain't got one.
That's right.
I'm just telling you.
It's a crazy system. Wins and losses should matter, but it should be the best teams. It's like the NCAA tournament for the basketball.
Right.
It doesn't really, but you have more games, and who he beat who doesn't really matter so much. It's really just a matter of, schedule and strength and all that. It's a weird system. Football's a weird thing. And of course, you got the problem is teams are now having the disincentive of playing these playing the championship games. Because it just gives you a chance to, if you're Clemson, it gives you a chance to get in. But if you're other teams, it gives you a chance to get beat out. Because it counts against you because you played an extra game. And other teams that don't play the extra game, it's weird. It's not a good system. But guess what? I think we like it messy.
Uh-oh.
I think we like football messy. I think we like the controversy. We like the drama. We like to yell and scream about it. It's just like Pensacola's relationship with Graffiti Bridge.
Yeah.
We love the wrecks. We do. We love being able to make fun of these people that cause tens of thousands of dollars of damage to their RVs or whatever. Yeah, which is
semis.
Which hasn't happened in a while.
No, it hasn't.
There hasn't been one, at least not been publicized in a while. But still, if all of those truck crashes went away, would you be happy or would you be sad? Come on, you'd miss it. You do miss it now that I mention it. Like, yeah, I do kind of miss that.
I would. I was just doing the voices with you.
Okay, yeah. All right. Voices in my head and the voices in your mouth. 550 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you are thinking about getting that next vehicle, Frontier Motors is a great selection of good quality used cars, 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 years old, low miles, great condition. Cars that are really like one owner, maybe two, but they're in such good condition that they can then sell them to you and stand by them almost like they're new cars. I mean, they're not new, but you avoid the new car price, you get a little bit better deal on a car that they're going to warranty to 10 years or 100,000 miles because it's in good condition, and they'll stand by those cars. We bought our Odyssey there, and we bought a car that was a year old with, I always forget if it was either 12 or 13,000 miles, but somewhere in that vicinity. A car that's basically brand new, came back off of it was a lease, from a fleet, we think, that came back to the dealership in Orlando. They had it on the lot for 90 days. Dealerships have all these weird rules. It didn't sell. They put it up for, I don't know why it didn't sell. It put it up for auction, and Frontier went and snatched it and sold it to us, and we got a smoking deal on a one-year-old car with 13,000 miles because that's what Frontier specializes in. Good quality used vehicles. Dave Ramsey recommends them. I recommend them. And all your neighbors and people around town with their bumper stickers and license plate frames, they recommend them too. Frontier Motors serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
Let's get to the points. MasterCard reward points from Pinair Credit Union. Open a new account today and you can earn 20,000 free reward points in the first 90 days. Use those points for travel, merchandise, even cash back. And with no hidden fees and no balance transfer fees, Pinair's Reward MasterCard fits you perfectly. Get started online at pinair.org/creditcards. Subject to credit approval, terms and conditions may apply. Offer available on new accounts only. See website for details.
Visit Prim and Proper in Gulf Breeze for custom engraving and unique gifts. Specializing in creating extraordinary keepsakes, their expert engravers bring your vision to life with elegant monograms, personalized messages, and logos. Whether it's custom drinkware, engraved glassware, or home decor, each piece is crafted with attention to detail for any occasion. Perfect for birthdays, anniversaries, weddings, or corporate gifts, Prim and Proper ensures your gift will leave a lasting impression. Stop by their Gulf Breeze location or visit them online at primandproper.com.
This is Hill Kelly Dodd wishing you a safe holiday season. Remember, please don't drink and drive. Hi, this is Joe with Peden Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electrical, wishing you a very comfortable holiday season.
This is Barry Cole at Beret Jewelers, wishing you a safe holiday season. Remember, please don't drink and drive.
Hi, everybody. This is Sonia Duque with Trinity Wellness of Pensacola and now in Pace. And we just want to wish you a very happy holiday. And we're just thinking of all of you. Bye. Happy holidays.
Hello, everyone. This is Austin Price wanting to wish you both a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year from News Radio 92.3.
Merry Christmas. News Radio 92.3.
We're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, of course not.
Whoa, baby, you're a nag, 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 nag. You're a nag,
nag, nag, nag. Somebody texts in, quite rightly reminding me that Clemson, by the win over SMU, wins a Power 5 conference. They win the ACC, so they get an automatic bid to the CFP. You're right. You're right. But John would say what? That just proves that...
that the SEC is so much better.
And that SMU shouldn't have been in. This is the argument. But yeah. All right. 5:54 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, President Biden praising the regime change in Syria. Speaking from the White House on Sunday, he called the collapse of President Bashar al-Assad's government, quote, a moment of historic opportunity for the long suffering of the people of Syria. His remarks come after a coalition of rebels captured the Syrian capital, prompting Assad to resign. There's about 900 U.S. troops currently stationed in Syria. TikTok's future still up in the air. Federal appeals court panel upholding the law mandating the sale or ban of the Chinese-owned social media platform. TikTok argues that's a violation of their First Amendment rights. And the search continuing for evidence in that shooting death of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson. Dive crews in Central Park over the weekend, they were searching a pond. So far, we're seeing that they have not found the gun that was used in that shooting. But a backpack linked to the shooter was found Friday and is being analyzed at a lab in Queens.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. 5:55 on News Radio 92.3. Taylor Swift making news because on her last performance of the Eras Tour on stage in Vancouver, there were camera crews on stage. They never have camera crews on stage, apparently. I know so little about all this except that I watched and fast-forwarded through the Eras Tour movie. It just didn't captivate me all that much. Anyway, the fans are excited because they think this means there will be a second Eras Tour movie, this time a documentary. Instead of a experience the magic for yourself, see behind the scenes of the making of the magic for yourself, which, based on the devotion, enthusiasm, persistence, and numerical advantage that the Taylor Swift army has, is a smart move. it's a smart move. But literally, this is one of those things, John, when I saw this report about how this must mean that there's going to be a documentary in the works, what I thought was, wait, I thought we did that already.
That's what I was just saying.
Why would they make a second? Oh, it's not a documentary, the first one. It's a concert movie. Okay. So
okay,
this will be
Swifties.
So that's a concert movie, and this will be the making of the concert movie with as much up-close and personal camera work as you didn't get the first time.
Yeah.
So, okay.
All right.
You know, enjoy your thing. You know, it's fine. Doesn't hurt anybody.
It's all you.
I have a dear, dear, dear friend who, you know, Taylor Swift is somewhere within 400 miles of me. I'm going, no matter what the cost. Like,
I think you'd do good at a Taylor Swift concert.
what do you mean?
I don't know. I just think you'd be bebopping along.
I watched Eras and I knew 20% of the songs.
Okay.
And that wasn't enough for me. I need to know more of the songs to really enjoy something.
Well, just keep watching it over and over.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. Okay. 5:57 on News Radio 92.3. I mentioned to you that the railroad crossings are closed. As far as I know, correct us if we're wrong, 437-1620, but the note we got from the county, CSX via the county yesterday, was that St. John by PCC was closed. I don't know why that one was in fine condition. This is all to fix the fixes, okay? 10 Mile, Kingsfield, and Old Chemstrand. Old Chemstrand is supposed to open this afternoon. 10 Mile and Kingsfield is supposed to open around 7 a.m. is their goal. Pond Street, Jefferson, and Salters Lake are all supposedly open. But again, this is I'm not going to go up and drive them all every time, so I'm kind of trusting somebody else's information. But typically, they've been pretty accurate, and people have been confirming, so I appreciate that. Meanwhile, we've got how many people does it take to elect a congressional representative? Well, apparently the number is 16. This is so crazy. We have 10 Republicans. 10 Republicans in the race to replace Matt Gaetz. Aaron Dimmock. I mean, everybody who's ever run against Matt Gaetz is in this except Chris Dossive. Okay? Aaron Dimmock. Kevin Gaffney. I don't know him. Jeff Macy. I don't know him. Greg Merk. John Mills. Perennial fourth place in a field of three. Sorry, it's just true. Jimmy Petronas, of course. Jeff Peacock, I don't know him. Joel Rubman, former representative. Michael Dillon Thompson, I don't know him. And Gene Valentino, former commissioner. I don't even know half the field. I do know half the field. I know half the field. The other half, God only knows. So we'll see. You win 20%, you're going to win this primary. That's all it takes. I mean, you know, each person, 10 gets an average of 10%. Okay, so if you're at 13, you're above average, but somebody's probably going to stand. Somebody's going to step up and win 25% of the primary, and they're going to win. And then, of course, the Democrat, it doesn't matter what happens in the general election because it'll be the Republican who wins that. On the NPA side, you got a guy named Stephen Brodin. Gay Valamont, the Democrat, is going to lose again in the general election after unopposed in the primary. Richard Dembinski, Stanley Gray, Jonathan Green, boo! Stan McDaniels, you know, completely pointless candidacies. They're the write-ins. So what's going to happen here? I don't know because Jimmy Petronas would appear to be the most qualified of all, but doesn't live here. And I think people are going to resent the fact that they feel like a guy's been picked for us, even though he's a really, really good, you know, in the CFO of Florida right now.